Hello, I'm Paul Yeager. This is the M2M Podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. Today, we are going to be talking about wildfires in the West, from California, Washington, and specifically today in the state of Oregon. Katie Schrock helped organize and start a group called Cowgirl 911. Started as a Facebook group. It's 19,000 strong as we talk here today. And what it's done is create an organization, or at least a plan, from someone who has an animal that's in trouble to get that animal out to a safe location and back again. It took a whole lot of people doing a whole lot of jobs. We'll talk about dispatching and hauling. There are more than 1,400 volunteers that said, hey, I'll haul an animal. And it could be a llama, it could be a cat or a dog or livestock. We'll talk about the organizational structure. And we also have to talk a little bit about sports. We'll talk rodeo, cowboying, and also playing basketball in the Pac-12. That's today's installment of the M2M Podcast. Is there going to be football in the Pac-12 this year, Katie? I mean, you got your Oregon State Cup there, so I have to start. I guess we got to be current with football, right?
Well, Big Ten's doing it now. I've seen a bunch changing over the last few days, you know, but all I'm saying is basketball. I'm the lucky duck. I'm a huge women's basketball fan. So last year, I actually had season tickets to both Oregon State and Oregon because they were so close. And so we got to watch Sabrina Ionescu as well as Michaela Pivic. So I'm all about the basketball, which is November 25th as of right now in the pack.
And that's exactly what I just saw, is that life is starting to return to normal. And unfortunately, some things are turning to normal, at least in seasons where you're in Oregon. And it's wildfire season, and it has been a brutal one. California has said this is they're on pace for their worst. What's the situation there where you're sitting?
So in Oregon, we typically don't have immense wildfires. Like, yeah, we do have like the occasional few within the year, but this is, I mean, I'm only 28, but I've never seen anything like this. And this is what, you know, my elders and the 4-H leaders that I was speaking with this week have said. And we had 39 fires burning a million acres at one point in time active on the western side, majority western side of the Oregon. And for those of you who aren't familiar, the western side is typically the coastal mountain range, and then the valley. This is all moderate temperature, and it's pretty wet typically. Like, we're known for being wet, for being green. And, you know, we have our hazelnut trees. We have all of our row crops and the pumpkins and all these different products that just typically don't just catch fire like a dry wheat field may. And that's been a whole game changer, because I don't think anybody on this side of the state was ready for, you know, fires in the Eugene area as well as fires in the Salem area, fires up by the gorge. It's just completely unprecedented.
Is there a lot of fuel for them? I mean, you mentioned fields, but it's normally forests is what you think about as fuels, fires to get our attention here in the Midwest that we would know. What's the fuel situation for these?
Well, first and foremost, I do have to say, like, I'm not the fire department, so I can't take this with a grain of salt. I'm just like a bystander with livestock. So with that being said, we had a perfect storm. We had easterly winds blow in that were, I think, 40 miles per hour. So these huge easterly winds came in, they provided the shoe, and it was like little fires that may have been burning that were almost out all of a sudden just erupted. And from what we heard from people on the ground fighting fires is that these fires didn't even act like a wildfire should. They were, you know, running downhill. They were leaping over rivers. It was just absolutely intense. And then with that, we came this huge smoke. So like our air quality index today is like 182 here in Corvallis. And I'm like, oh, I can breathe. This is amazing. Because typically it's been about 500 to 600 for the air quality index, which is extremely dangerous. So people have their N95 masks on outside, you know, COVID completely, you know, disregarded in the sense of mask, in that sense. We have to have a mask on. I've had multiple asthma attacks as well as many other people. So we're trying to run volunteer shifts because it's pretty scary. I mean, the smoke was right on top. And then because the smoke was there all of a sudden, and I obviously, if you're used to fires, you know this, Western Oregon here, I'm not used to fires. It got cold, really cold. I mean, it dropped to 38 degrees one night. There's ice on the ground. We were shivering. And I was just like, how is this even possible? We're evacuated from fires and we're freezing right now. So kind of craziness with all of that. And then we're watching weather warnings through the weekend. So just 10 days after those fires, because now we have flash flood warnings. We have winter storm warnings. We have blizzard warnings. We have mudslide warnings. So it's like all this craziness is just like, what is happening right now? So we're trying to stay as together as we can as a community.
And I did see that there was some snow in some areas, not necessarily your backyard, but that did help quench some of those things. But in a sense, snow can only do so much. It's either going to run out of the fuel or it's going to get put out, one of those two areas. Now, you mentioned the ag side of things, the livestock side of thing. When you're not prepared for something because things happen so quick, livestock can kind of get caught in the middle of what do we do now? So how did you... I guess it's going to be a big, long story here. I'm going to let you kind of just tell it from the beginning. How did Cowgirl 911 start?
Well, for me personally, we've only ever evacuated. I had to evacuate from just a park fire that got out of control in college. But before that, when I was growing up, we had a field fire that kind of took root and we were watching it pretty closely. And I remember at the time we could barely fit all the animals that we had into our one trailer. And in my head, ever since that moment, I think I was like seven, I always want to have the number of slots in a trailer as we do. We have horses and dogs. And that time growing up, we had rabbits. And so I always want to have room for every animal that we have. Now, any commercial producer already knows that's basically impossible. Like you cannot put all of your animals into a set of trucks and have them 90% of them sit most of the year round. So what happened is I actually have a podcast with my company, Western Insights Media. That podcast is called That Western Life. And in 2019, we interviewed Justin Jones, who had started a group called Cowboy 911 in California. So we had worked with Justin and chatted about everything that was happening. 18 months ago, we had a flood, and that flood, I think, caused two or three stable evacuations as they had rivers just rushing through. And so we had posted into Cowboy 911 and we said, is anyone in Oregon able to help? We were able to get help. So obviously when these fires started, there's that community already built. So I jumped into the community and then realized, of course, California is on fire. So that group, Cowboy 911 with Justin Jones, was just filled with Californians. Like that was their area. And I noticed that it took me a second because some of their fires had very similar names and some of their towns had very similar names. And I was like, this would be really easy to mix up. And so people constantly will make a breakout group. So we made a breakout group, which was just Cowboy 911 Oregon. Well, then after about 18 hours, someone reached out and apparently there's been a trademark battle with the real Cowboy 911, which is Justin Jones's group, and then another Cowboy 911. And at the time, you know, we had people going from the fire's 30 miles from us to my house is on fire within 6 hours. So we did not have time to sit around and be like, what's a naming convention? Like, what's this? So I had talked to a evacuation center's legal counsel and he had said, Cowgirl 911, just do that. And I said, okay, fine. Cause it's just a Facebook community, you know, and that Facebook community has exploded. So we had some really interesting situations kind of develop. And so we had created a dispatching system. And the very first one, which is crazy, it's only been about 10 days. The very first one we created on day one was just Google Sheets, and it included who needed help and where they were and who the point of contact was, how many animals and what kind of animals and where they were going. We then found people who had said that they could help, whether it was in transportation or in hosting facilities. And then we connected the two together via phone call. So we had people just sitting right here at this island on the phone calling people like, you know, we're just confirming you need help. Have you been helped? Do you have assistance? If they did, we updated the Facebook post to say they had assistance. If they didn't, we found people based off of the spreadsheet that we had organized by town to go help them. So we were able to kind of start coordinating those. Well, fast forward about 18 hours after that, a lady named Amanda reached out, and I believe she's a logistics coordinator for Amazon, and she had worked natural disaster relief for Katrina. And so she had said, hey, we'd use this ticketing system to get supplies to people. Some people needed supplies, they'd reach out. So we end up working with her, and we make this, like, it's a mind-blowing system. So with this dispatch group, with Amanda and Kat and a whole variety of other amazing individuals, we created their own page for this. And it's a website, and it was just PNW Wildfire Animal Rescue. And so what you do is you go there and you can fill out a form that tells them if you can help with transportation, what your experience is, where you're at, what your contact is, or if you had facilities and all of that information. So what we do then is we started training dispatchers, which included 4 Zoom calls a day for 40 minutes apiece, and it trained them all the way through. Once you were trained just to dispatch, and we had people from Kentucky and Texas and all over the country who were dispatching. So once you were trained to dispatch, you jumped into a dispatching group. You signed up for a shift. You had a shift lead that was a trained person, one of the original point people. And then from there, they would work these dispatch shifts. So we did 200, I think it's just over 250 tickets. The entire group itself has, we tried to keep track of it, but it was over 20,000. I mean, that was couple days ago. So over 20,000 animals were evacuated. Those 200 plus tickets were 100% success rate. We had no bogus calls, which we actually started seeing within the Facebook group when people posted. They would send people on wild goose chases, whether they were well-intentioned people who were just misinformed. We're not really sure about that. So it kind of became a crazy situation, but we were able to get people's private information off of social media, run it through the forms directly, have a dispatcher contact them within seconds of them putting that form in, getting them connected with someone to help them, and then having a full paper trail of who went where and where the animal is. And again, all of these people are volunteers. They are like absolutely amazing individuals. And that is our Cowgirl 911 system. And now it's working in reverse to get everybody home. And then the Facebook page and group is, well, the Facebook group is open for anybody to post donations or supplies or other little assistance that maybe isn't an emergency per se. And then with that, we also have our Facebook page, which we're using to share the stories of people being reunited, the heroic stories of big saves. There are some amazing stories from the flames that we think need to be shared.
You know, people don't always, I think the majority of people that at least watch our TV show and probably are listening to this understand the connection of humans to animals. Even on a commercial side of things, we still get attached to cow 902, hog 1497J. Yeah. But when it might be your livestock that is, say, a horse that's been in the family for a number of years, or a stable of them, or animals that you have kept for years, it is extremely important. And when you've been one of those owners, you understand, yes, I need to help, even if I am in Kentucky, to help those people. So really, to me, it doesn't, I think some people think having somebody from Kentucky or Washington State is going to be a surprise. It's not to me. Was it a surprise to you?
You know, it was at first, and I just saw the post and I saved it. So I hope I can circle back with her, you know, once everything calms down. But she had competed in 3-day eventing, and we actually have a really big field trial here called Innovale Field Trials, and that's over in Western Oregon. And they had posted saying, like, I see that my friends are hurting. I can't have boots on the ground, but you can. But what I can do is I'm 3 hours ahead of you on East Coast time. I can run the dispatch center from what would be, you know, midnight to 3 or midnight to 4 your time, but that's actually 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. my time. That's not that big of a deal for me because I went to bed at 6. So that was like a really cool connection. And I think there's a great possibility for volunteers to be able to do something like that in the future. And honestly, we had, you know, obviously we had the fires in Oregon, but Washington has now had severe fires. So we actually have different groups that we've worked with as point people who have entire, they call themselves the Cowboy Convoy, and they have been hauling semis of hay up to Eastern Washington to the commercial cattle operations up there that are completely out of feed right now. So they made out a call to help, and we were like, we're there. We got people. We're coming.
Well, because everybody's experience or what they can offer is different. If it is someone who's 3 hours ahead can work, or if it's somebody with a semi that's like, I have to make a run up to Pullman. That's not out of the way to go back down to Eugene on my way to wherever. Mm-hmm. I can do that. And everybody had, you know, big, little. So what do you think the average size of assistance was in an actual moving of an animal or a herd or someone's livestock? I mean, are we talking 1-2 at a time, or are we talking 20 to 30 different animals?
All of the above. So we have a lot of the, you know, up in like the Sweet Home area or in Estacada, like a private facility that had just 1 or 2 animals at home, whether they were llamas or, you know, a potbelly pig or two. You know, those were like the one-offs, and we were able to send the 1 to 2 horse trailers. But I think the big thing that we have to speak to is the commercial haulers who stepped up. And part of that has to do with, we got a call from an individual in Boring, Oregon, and, you know, his hogs were his commercial hog production. You know, they were a smaller scale local group, but that 20 head of hogs is their livelihood. And what was hard is that multiple people had showed up to try to help them because they had posted in forums saying, we need help, we need help. And these were not, I mean, I'm not a hog person. I would show up with my, you know, 18 inch step up ramp or not even a ramp horse trailer and been like, what, they're not going to jump in? Like what? Yeah. So, you know, like I wouldn't know those things, but we were able to pull our hog resources off the cowgirl. And when one group, we actually sent a professional showman who travels to like 15 states. I mean, you guys probably all know these people from the national circuits, and he had a special hog trailer and he showed up there with a whole bunch of friends and family that show hogs. And while the hogs are pretty wild, I will give them that. They hadn't been hauled since they were piglets. But he was able to get 18 of those 20 into the trailer after two other attempts had been made. And we were able to get them down into the Benton County facility, which was kind of far away for them, but it was just a great place that could hold that large number of animals. We also had a dairy farmer who had irrigation on his pasture. So he felt pretty comfortable. They were like level one evacuation, level two. So he felt pretty comfortable about his dairy herd in and of itself, but his calves were not, like the babies were not in a place that they could be. So we actually had a convoy of trailers come through. We had five of those, which included one horse and 19 dairy calves of various, you know, bull calves, steers, and heifers. And so we were able to bring them in, and we had feedlots ready to go that had fenced off different sections specifically for large mass amounts of cattle, sheep, or hogs that would be coming in.
How did you find the places to take them? I know you kind of have covered that a little bit, but when you have those different needs of one and 20 or mm-hmm. two and 10, you know, different things, how do you, I mean, I guess that's all part of the group, but did you have to solicit anybody to say, hey, could you take some of this? Or did, were there a lot of people that just stepped up and said, hey, I've got space in this shed?
Honestly, to be totally honest, we didn't solicit for anything. Like, obviously we don't want to, you know, pressure anybody into taking animals because of liability reasons. You know, we don't, you know, we're just a bunch of volunteers who are trying to just connect dots between those in need and those who have and are willing to volunteer. But with that being said, our dispatch system alone, so we have 19,000 in the Facebook group who have reached out with varieties of assistance. But in our dispatching group, we had over 1,400 people willing to haul, and we had over 1,000 places willing to hold animals, and we only had 200 tickets. So I've gotten a lot of hate mail, and this is like the best thing in the world. I've gotten hate mail from people who were like, we feel out. We wanted to go evacuate people. How come we didn't get called? And I'm like, it's a good thing. It's absolutely a good thing. We had enough people. You know, we had 14 drivers for every evacuation, and we had 10 homes for every animal that was picked up. But the one big thing is that our fairgrounds have worked very well together to create evacuation points. You know, our kids didn't have fair this year because of COVID. And so our kids have in the 4-H and FFA sectors have all done a phenomenal job of, you know, staying masked up, staying safe, social distancing, creating schedules, and then all showing up, you know, in their approved times and working together. They basically set up fair in like 60 minutes flat. And so that was the cool thing. Wow. And then they have been cleaning stalls and everything along the way. We did make some jokes with like large amounts of hogs that came in. We're like, okay, everybody pick a hog. We're going to have showmanship here in a second, you know? But you know, typically we don't have that many on site, just the minimum of what we need. The 4-H'ers, I mean, volunteered by the thousands to come in and help. And so they've been great. I know at Benton County specifically, they've been walking the horses twice a day. Air quality is too high, obviously, to make them work, but they're in 12 by 12 stalls and may have come off of 10 acre pastures. So they're walking them every day. They're fed twice a day. Water buckets are dumped and refilled five times, even including throughout the night. And that's so that the water and ash doesn't mix to make lye. And then we also have turnout pins. So each horse gets 20 minutes of turnout plus two 15-minute walking, hand walking sprees. So these horses are probably going home with ribbons and braids in their mane and tail, like extra loved on. And we have bunnies that are here and people hold them and kind of spend some cuddle time with them because we know that's what their owners would be doing if they were home. So we're trying to recreate the best way we can and then also send photos and text the owners every day to let them know that, hey, like, don't worry about your animals. Like, we've got them covered here.
I got to say, that's just impressive for so many different levels of the attention to detail of, you know, the braids and the ribbons and the petting and the animal care, because you mentioned your 4-H kids. And when you don't have a chance for that fair, that is supposed to be about life and life lessons. You can't get much more real life compassion and caring and animal care than what you've been able to put together here in about 10 days.
Yeah. Well, and all that really came together in just a couple of days. And we got to work with the Oregon Department of Ag pretty closely. They are amazing. You know, we were able to work out with them to get documents, and it really kind of highlighted though, that within our state, especially on the Western side, we were not really prepared. I mean, if you Google safest place from natural disasters and safest town, it's going to be my hometown in Oregon. Like, and that's like a thing that was like my bragging thing. Whenever I would go travel places, is like, I live in the safest place in the world. And now I'm like, whoa, that was wild. This has been a wild 2 weeks. So it's really highlighted what we can do. And what makes me really happy is now we've opened up these conversations about what can we do to create more sustainable and functional and trustworthy, you know, very, very trustworthy future immediate rescue animal reaction programs. I know on the people side, I mean, they were reaching out to us and asking questions as well. And that was really interesting to me. It's just that even on like an overall sector, it was, you know, we had someone fill out a dispatch ticket to go get their parents because they were in Minnesota and their parents couldn't drive and they were really worried they wouldn't get out. So they was just like on a whim. They were like, the Calgary 911 group and their dispatch tickets are the fastest working one. And so our dispatcher just made sure they knew. They said, hey, there's a cat, but you know, there's not, it's really to get these people out. And they're like, yeah, no problem. Like, we're gone. Give us the address. We're there. And so I don't know, maybe hopefully we have some longevity out of this, some sustainability, and we can kind of create some systems and some ready to go action packs that people can use.
So you mentioned Cowboy 911 there with Justin Jones. Mm-hmm. Had you studied what was done? Did you participate in it last year to help? Because it sure seems like people knew what to do and you weren't starting from scratch, that there was a little bit of a blueprint mm-hmm. before to operate off of.
Yeah. So talking to Justin Jones before, you know, and we've been in contact with him through all of this. Like, he's been a wonderful resource as we chat about, well, liability and like this and like that. Cause you know, there's always that fear of, you know, we had to put a post up and it was like, hey, if you see a large herd of cattle confined in an area, they were not abandoned. In fact, their owners are probably sitting there with, you know, large hauling semi trucks, you know, tractor trailers, and they're ready to get them out. They're just waiting for that go moment. Like, we've been working with them. Do not go open the gate. Like, do not turn them loose. Like, please don't do that. So it was really interesting with all of that, with, you know, talking to Justin about like, how do we handle this? How do we address this? What's your insight? But what we did differently. So in the groups, like for Cowboy 911, it's simply just a post a need or post what you have, and then people claim it. So it's all within the people themselves. Our group has that facet as well. That's just like a natural thing with Facebook groups. We did actually moderate a little bit more because like talking to Justin, we had some weird things that like don't typically happen, like not very neighborly things that typically happen, which were people on wild goose chases or picking up animals maybe they weren't supposed to pick up. So that's why we started the dispatch system, so that we could really verify, like use the system with this third party group with Amanda's team. And then from there we can go. So we actually would go in after someone posted, we would say, you can either contact the original poster or you can fill out this Pacific Northwest dispatch form. And then we would turn the comments off and people would get upset because they're used to those groups where you know, hundreds of people are commenting and sharing on a thread. You could still share it. You could still comment the original poster. The original poster could still go in and change and put an update in there. But what it was doing, it was keeping it from bumping it to the top. So whatever was the most recent posted was at the top. We were able to give them the form. So as this, you know, transgressed and as we hit, you know, fire started to get contained and people could start going home, we also started putting the Oregon Department of Agriculture's displaced and found animal forms. We were able to put, we are not taking donations. And a lot of people, you know, the nature of the beast, people were like fundraising for us. And we were like, no, that's not us. And so we were able to work with House representatives to find just a couple, you know, nonprofits that have their certification, their articles of incorporation that we can use as a resource to tell people where to go. Cause we, as Calgary 911, are not taking any funds. We did suggest if you had gas cards you wanted to buy or gift cards, you could drop them off at the fairgrounds for drivers. Like, we had a driver named Wyatt who probably put hundreds of hours. I think he said he did 20,000+ miles on his vehicle just in a couple of days. And so we knew he was coming in and out with livestock 24/7. Like, he was like one dispatcher's go-to driver. Like, she knew he had a big trailer. He hauled in like 4 cows, 3 llamas, 2 alpacas and a pig. Like, he had it like completely covered. So we would give like him a gas card because the people at that facility, you know, saw his face often as he came in and out with livestock. So here's a card for you. But on a whole, we weren't taking those funds. And so I guess what we did is we took that process of Cowboy 911 We really streamlined it with our original efficiency with those sheets. And we were able to bring in that ticketing system via people who have nothing to do with agriculture that were just like, hey, we see this on Facebook, we can help. Mm-hmm. And we trusted them and we rolled with it. And so I know that they're ending their page and their information 2 weeks after the date. And so we're just working on, you know, some systems to see if we can kind of keep something like that in place throughout.
You mentioned your day job just a tiny little bit. Will you do that again? Because then I want to go in your background, because you can't, the way you're able to relay all this information, clearly there's some training that you have, and we'll get into a little background on that. So your day job is what, Katie?
So my day job is I have my own company, which is Western Insights Media. We do marketing, communications, and public relations, specifically in the agriculture sectors. So when I started the company, I only wanted to do non-profit natural resource groups, and then turned out they didn't have as much money for hiring contract people as I thought, which totally makes sense. So we do big country music festivals, fairgrounds, event centers, Western fashion, and then we actually do some magazines out of Northern California that we are associate editor on.
In mid-September, you'd be probably a little busy.
Yeah. Yes. Typically in August, the first week of August is my busiest time. And then it dwindles down from there. And then we gear back up for the national finals rodeo.
So what's your background university wise or schooling?
Well, I went to Oregon State University, agricultural business management and applied economics, doubled new media communications with an emphasis on PR and marketing. But I really lucked out in the sense that I also played basketball at Oregon State. And so from there, I sat on the bench mainly. So I really shouldn't say I played basketball. But as a 4-H kid my whole life, I did wildlife stewards, cattle, rabbits, horses, leadership, ran our summer conference. So competed in judging contests and all the whole nine yards that 4-H offers, I took. And so with that, I actually, you know, kind of extended that into college. So I was on the Student Athlete Advisory Council for women's basketball, worked at the NCAA on that and the Pac-12. So a lot of great opportunities I tried to make the best of, even though I wasn't getting the playing time that I wanted. I'm a little small, so they didn't really work. So I did the best I could to do that. And then after college, I think it was like just a year after college or so, I ran for and won the title Miss Rodeo Oregon. Making my sister and I the first sister duo to be Miss Rodeo Oregons, and then went to Miss Rodeo America, was very fortunate to place in the top 10, make a lot of great connections. And all while doing that, I worked at the Oregon Cattlemen's Association at the Capitol and started my company.
The background is varied, and you, from the sports side of things, you learn the value of teamwork and a close group of 12 to 15 that are, you know, with each other and the network that can provide. But your education, was there a college class that prepared you for anything like this? Not, and I mean the Cowgirl 911, not just your own company. I mean, that's kind of what they'd want you to do, but... And if not, when will you be asked to teach that 2 to 10 week course?
Oh, I don't know. So nothing, you know, at the time I remember, actually I always felt kind of like an odd duck. So I was in college from 2010, you know, 2014. And so for me, I didn't really feel like I fit in the new media because I was the weird ag kid. And then in the ag classes, I was the weird sports kid. So it was kind of a weird mix where I never really, and like, honestly, that could have been like my own, like everybody hates me kind of thing. That I mean, not that they hate me, but it was just, I always felt weird. And I always felt really bad because we're gone so much for sports. And so you're constantly having to do projects on your own or really asking a lot of those in your class, like, can you take notes for me? Because every other week you're gone Wednesday through Sunday. So, I mean, that's a big toll on your classwork. And so for me, you know, none of that really would have, you know, relayed per se. But the big thing is that I can see the value that communications and storytelling bring. I mean, we have a lot of people in our group right now and they have nothing to do with livestock, maybe don't even have animals. It's one of the screening questions to get into the group just to see kind of, you know, where people are at. But it's a lot of just people helping people help livestock and animals. And that's kind of been our tagline since the start. And what I hope, though, is that, you know, I've been brought more aware. I did speeches in 4-H about first aid kits and information like that. But there's a lot of things that we have learned. And as an efficient, I'm an absolute efficiency nerd. So for anyone who knows me, this is like the nerdiest thing ever. So in basketball, in college, my coach was an amazing sports analyst. Like, he was very analytical. And so we would make these efficiency ratings, which is like all of the good divided by all the bad. And you would like multiply like assists, 2 times the assists, 4 times the fouls, right? So you would weight these different categories and you do all good divided by all bad. And that would be your efficiency rating. And he would have different goals for each position. So working in the capital, being Miss Rodeo Oregon, I was going a million miles an hour. So I made a planner that's an efficiency planner, and I can get my efficiency rating for the day. So I'm like this absolute nerd about efficiency. So what we kind of did is stick the Cowboy 911 group, and then we're like, how can we make this more efficient, more streamlined? Because we didn't have 3 hours to find somebody to get somebody out, you know, and for me, we didn't have a single fire in my county, like, thank God, you know, and so we were sitting here kind of helpless, like, well, how can we help? And I didn't want someone to get lost. And so that's why we started the spreadsheet. Then when we implemented on top of that, the form situation, the form opportunity for the dispatch cards and tickets. And so from there, we were able to actually make sure, like, hey, we gave you an option for help. It really, and if you're not good at technology, all you had to say was, I can't fill it out. And we would call you and we would fill it out for you and get you going. So we try to, we even had, which is like even crazy because people just keep jumping into volunteer. We had somebody who works in the government for English as a second language, and they spoke six languages. So if we had someone come through who didn't speak English, we could send them through to them at any time of day and they would help them. Even, you know, sign language, Korean, Chinese, Spanish, anything like that, they were able to help them.
Well, I would imagine that your neighboring states, like you mentioned, Washington is having some struggles right now and the fire's still there, still in California. California has some of their infrastructure. They're used to some of those things. But I would imagine when people can use the power of Google, they'll find out who Cowgirl 911 is, and you're probably going to get a call and an email, and somebody's going to ask you and pick your brain about what you've done.
Absolutely do so. Open line of communications at all times. We actually talked really closely. Washington and Oregon used to have a good neighbor policy, even when it came to Coggins tests for horses, where we didn't have to have them to haul over the border. They actually waived a lot of those during this time because people in very close to the border from Oregon had to evacuate to Washington, and now Eastern Washington down to Oregon as well. So they had reached out, and we actually really looked at putting together a Washington evac program plan. But talking to, we work as close as we can with the government officials. Like that is our, like, we want to be on the up and up. We want to be, we don't want to be counterproductive just because we have a bigger following. Like I laughed because we had a guy like send us a message and was like, hey, can you let everybody know? Cause you can tell them faster than we can about the displaced animal stuff. And it's like, yeah, for sure. And we didn't want to overstep any of the procedures that are already in place. Like those strategic plannings, you know, they should be in place and we should all be following them. And with that being said, Washington has a DART system, as they call it. I'm not sure what the acronym stands for, but after our dispatch team and then our logistics coordinator on our end, which is Raquel Bauer, after they had talked through with Washington officials, I believe it was Washington Department of Agriculture. I didn't speak with them, so I can't speak to that. But they decided that to stay with the DART system that they had because they were afraid of losing people between the gaps of like not knowing where to go. But the group did stay, is obviously open to whoever needs help. What's been interesting though, is we started it because California was so heavy hit that we didn't want to be in that group. And then it was really interesting because now we have people from California posting about needing help from our group. And so I was like, oh, wait, let's just send these guys over to Justin because he's got California locked down when it comes to search and rescue saves and such.
Yeah. And knowing your regions, you mentioned Washington. I'm not sure if you meant Washington State or DC, but it brings up a point of, what was the relationship with, say, FEMA? Because FEMA's having to deal with, this doesn't sound like something that I know that they do too much of. I don't have all the inner workings. Like, you don't have all the inner workings of the fire department. I don't have a FEMA. But you've got the things going on in your three-state region, and it's a big region. Some people think it's just down the road. I mean, it still takes you 12 hours to get from Seattle to San Francisco. I mean, it's a long drive, so there's a big amount of area. So FEMA's having to deal with fires in those regions. Then the hurricanes that keep hitting. And then, well, by the way, we've been in the middle of a pandemic. So this is one of those things where locally you were able to fill a need that was there.
Absolutely. And hopefully, you know, when things kind of slow down a little bit, like we would love to have conversations with, you know, we've already talked to Department of Ag in Oregon. Like just, we'd love to have conversations about like, is there anything that didn't help? Is there things that did help? Like what, like just looking into the future. And, you know, thankfully Oregon doesn't have a lot of natural disasters, like knock on wood. And so maybe something that we can do, you know, is help other states. As we had people reach out from Louisiana that were like, so hypothetically speaking, like what does this look like with these, you know, hurricanes coming in? And my heart's like, wait, I probably too big of a heart. I'm just like, we got to help everybody. Like, if they want help, we'll figure out something to do. And we have all these dispatchers from all over that would probably be more than happy to keep dispatching. So I don't know what this looks like in the future. I know that our current dispatch team has set plans to end their 14 days after. And that way any longevity things will go through Department of Agriculture. We have different referral resources and we'll have all of those up at cowgirl911.com/resources. And so you can just go there to see for Oregon specific, you know, we'll put this incident in the pandemic wildfires, and then you can find those resources from there. Just quick and easy, efficient.
All right. If there is any way that anybody does want to help, because this is going to be close to airing after your 14 days start, and if somebody listens to this late, they get caught up later. What's a good way I can help or offer support? Or is it just an information thing, and knowing that this is out there, and put that in the back in case something tragic happens down the road?
Well, hopefully, you know, God forbid anything tragic happens. Like, I'm over natural disasters, and we've had two in like a year and a half, and I'm over it. I don't know how other states handle these. And I remember the Colorado wildfires and helping out from the cattle side of things. And I think the big thing is if you want to go to cowgirl911.com, you can find kind of all the information there. So as we close one ticketing dispatch system, we're hoping to maybe start opening up what would be a more long-term one, depending on where that's at. And then from there, we'll have, hopefully we want to build some resources. Like there, we want to have some, how to trailer load your horse that doesn't like to trailer, because a horse that's kind of finicky about trailering gets real finicky when it's a new trailer. People they don't, maybe don't know, and there's smoke in the air, fires blazing in the backyard. So we want to kind of build this little library of resources from there. But as a writer, and there's a lot of freelance writing, like I said, I work with those magazines in Northern California, which is the Cattle Mag and the Ag Mag. I really want to show stories, and there's some like real heart-wrenching stories of like horses who swam through rivers with people to get to safety and to get into a Bi-Mart parking lot, to get into a trailer, to get to a vet's office. And it's just absolutely amazing. So we've actually done a decent job, hopefully, and I'm sure more will surface, of actually interviewing these people, recording the stories, and we want to put them all together into like a blog of sorts. I think learning from people who have been through this is really important. And I think that, I think every 4-H kid in my county, probably in the state, is probably going to do animal rescue, first aid, or animal evacuation plans as their state speech this year. So there's going to be a lot of information out there, and I'm really excited about that. But maybe we can create a little bit stronger plans when it comes to that.
Well, the county folks are going to have you come in as a judge then, and use that as you're now become a 4-H judge. All right, last couple things. Hardest place to play in the Pac-12 for women's basketball.
When I was there or now?
Yeah, when you were there.
Stanford.
Ooh, yeah.
They're amazing. Tara Vanderbilt had a great team. We went toe-to-toe with them. I remember we were up by 7 at halftime. Like, I remember we were up by 7 at halftime, and we all like tiptoed out of the gym into the locker room, and we were like, play it cool. We got in the locker room. We're like Snapchatting. We're like, we're up on Stanford. Yeah, we lost by like 10. But it's fine. Like, we were really excited, but honestly, now the biggest event in Pac-12 women's basketball is if you can find a Civil War ticket, or it's not Civil War anymore, if you find the Oregon State University of Oregon women's basketball ticket, buy it. I think they were $3,200 that were left for last year. So there are two games and basically 3 days apart, one in Corvallis and one in Eugene. And at the time, it was the number one team versus the number two team in the country.
I was thinking Oregon was, I mean, they were destined for a Final Four. It was going to be.
I had my tickets.
Oh, man.
But yeah, no, sorry, I interrupted you. But yeah, Oregon was number one. And then I think Oregon State was number two. But then Oregon had just lost. I think they dropped to 3, and Oregon State was still number two. And that's a heated rivalry. I mean, like, if you beat Oregon in a game and that was the only game you won in a rebuilding year, like, you were good. And same for them. Like, then you're like, oh, well, we can hang your hat on that. Like, that was a good season. We beat Oregon.
Saved a coach's job maybe a time or two.
Right. Yeah. Well, and we have a little bit of a rivalry because our when my recruiting coach, when I was there, our guard coach, Mark Campbell, he's phenomenal, is actually over at Oregon now. So it makes the rivalry a little bit more heated.
Yeah, when they know the insides and the traditions and maybe just know how to just torque just a little bit. Best part of your game was what? Was
for
it
me,
your threes? Yeah.
Yeah, I think I still, I actually haven't checked yet. I think I still hold all of the Oregon records for 3-point shooting, both in made in the state tournament and then shooting percentage. I think, I don't know. It's hopefully it's been beaten by now. I hope somebody has, for 5A. And so, I was a sharp shooter. I had different high school coaches every single year. So I actually learned a lot in college because I tore my shoulder and had to sit out. And that's when I bought my rodeo horse. Sounds like a terrible plan, like tore your shoulder, bought a rodeo horse. So for me, that was a great opportunity to sit back. I learned about the efficiencies, got to learn about, you know, don't look at what's happening here, look at what's happening here. And like, obviously a lot of those attributes is what has impacted my business on a strategy communication side, on a public relations side, as well as in the Cowgirl 911 now. So it all kind of works out.
It does. All right, Katie, I appreciate the time. Thank you for all the work that you've done and your group's done. A lot of people have benefited from it, and let's hope don't have to utilize some of those plans, but we know that unfortunately disasters do happen. So Katie Schrock, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
My thanks to Katie Schrock and Cowgirl 911. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, send me an email, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening.